Good afternoon. My name is Susan Cox. I'd like to welcome all of you to the LTV Board of Directors Finance Committee. And the sun is shining, so all is well. I'd like to call to order. So, Gino Grimaldi.
Here.
Lawrence Green.
Here.
And Susan Cox. Regarding comments from the chair, I just want to say again how pleased I am that this committee sort of expanded its scope, and we're going to hear more about that later. So just want to say again how much I appreciate and think that's a good thing. So we do have audience participation tonight. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties, so we hope that isn't going to be a problem for anyone, but if anyone has an interest in speaking,
we don't have anybody at this
point. We don't. Okay, then. So the first item for action is the election of officers. And first, we're going to open the nominations for chair of the finance committee. So are there any nominations from the chair?
I would like to nominate Susan Cox, if you want.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Oh, I think it's done. Okay. And now I'd like to open nominations for vice chair. Is there a nomination for the floor?
I nominate Jim Grimaldi.
I'll second.
Sure.
Okay. So done and done. Okay. Our next item is contract number 2023-07. It's the new Choir of America. I'd like to welcome Matt Inlock to dazzle us with what is
Well, I'll try to be as efficient as you were. I was one of the quickest elections I've seen. But today I'm going before you guys, and hopefully I'm loud enough. If you need something, I'll watch your faces. But to have up to seven diesel 60-foot buses to supplement our MX fleet. Our MX fleet, just as a background, is our BRT, our bus rapid transit. As you saw in your packet, it has and supports about 40% of our overall ridership currently. Buses at this length and capacity have a minimum useful life of 12 years or 500,000 miles. And so as we look at kind of our replacement of identifying what vehicle we need to replace, you look at the age as well as the miles to identify that. These vehicles are coming to the place where we need to replace them. So before you is exactly that. We're hoping that the finance committee will send to the board adoption of this contract. So again, just a few things to highlight. This goes away from what we've previously done. This is just a straight diesel running on renewable diesel that we wanted to utilize and capitalize on. We do think, as far as evaluation, that this is the best approach going forward for this fleet. And then as you're looking at really what we're needing to support the overall mission of connecting our community, this is the target. So opening up to the floor, but before I, one other thing to highlight is we have the ability to purchase off of the state cooperative agreement, where Washington, Oregon, California, you have inter agencies available to purchase. And so we're teaming up or coming on to the state of Washington's cooperative agreement to be purchasing off of that for this. That gives us the ability to have a little bit more volume discount when you're looking at these vehicles, because you're attaching to the state of Washington. So that's how the prices came, was established and looked at, and that's what we're bringing forward. And I guess one thing I didn't highlight is the cost and what we're talking about. So seven buses to the total of $7.4 million about, to be precise, $7,376,714. So now I open it for a question from.
Thank you, Matt. Are there any questions?
I have a couple. But you mentioned these are diesel. What are the existing?
That's it. Yeah, thanks for clarifying. We still run diesel, but those are diesel hybrid. So it has an electrical component on that. The intention is that you may get more mileage off of that. So if you look at You know, you think of a hybrid car that you'd extend the range and you'd see greater miles per gallon capacity. That's not the case really with these vehicles. So we ran an analysis just recently to say, what's the difference from a straight diesel vehicle, 60 foot, and a MX hybrid? And you're talking like 0.5 miles per gallon differences. And in general, and this is tough to swallow, but diesel vehicles moving that many people, less than 5 miles per gallon is what you're getting. So when you're looking at that fractional of a difference, really doesn't equate, as well as the additional labor costs to support.
Is there a price difference between the diesel hybrid and straight diesel?
Substantially. So we're talking to the tune of about $280,000 difference.
More or less?
More for a hybrid bus. Yeah, thanks for putting that.
What happens to the old ones?
To the old ones?
Yeah.
So at the end of the useful life, when you're retiring a bus, you dispose of it. And so we can either send it to auction, and that's what we've done in the past to see who's interested in purchasing this. We've done that recently through Lane County, auction it off, and there's not really a huge market for 60-foot buses. Mm-hmm. There's more of a market where people want to maybe take a 40-foot that most people wouldn't drive and revitalize that. But when you're looking at disposing of vehicles, your most popular one are your cutaway vehicles that you're disposing of. But every vehicle, FTA as well as government, kind of establishes how to dispose of that, what's the minimum useful life.
One last question, New Flyer, do they have any competitors that can provide a similar bus?
They do. Not many people are in that space, to be quite frank with you. New Flyer Nova has recently got, that's another bus manufacturer. TriMet recently joined with Nova for some bus purchases up there. I would say when we're looking at these buses, a 5-door 60-foot bus really isn't mainly, there's not many people out there. I think New Flyer is currently the only one that provides a 5-door bus.
They're the only ones to meet our requirements.
Yes.
I wanted to make them feel wanted. So.
No. You know, I got a big crowd here, keep on peppering me.
Did I ask the right questions?
Yeah, I think you did a really good job. Thank you.
I have a question. So I like the idea of partnering, you know, the pre-state collaboration. So do you all kind of order at the same time, or is it just?
Yeah, let me expand and be a little bit clear. I wasn't as clear. So state agencies can go before and look at the procurement requirements and say, hey, we think we're going to be purchasing a particular quantity. And as Oregon, and the procurement, Wendy might be able to answer this better. We can say, hey, we want to join that contract, and here's what we want to purchase. So there's those conversations. I think the FAST, there's an act that allowed for that to happen in interstate commerce to allow for a more efficient procurement process. And so as you're looking at us, we're a relatively small agency. We don't buy thousands of vehicles where the state does, and that's how people kind of.
So what about just all of the supply chain? Is that going to be an issue here?
Not with getting a contract, but as far as how the lead times are, absolutely there you're seeing that with that, with ordering. But the sooner we can get in place, the better. We are slotted at an 18-month type of process. But the quicker you can get in, there is some fluidity in that schedule, and our hopes and goals are to get a lot quicker.
Does it lock in the price?
It does.
Okay,
that's a good point. So yeah, the value is locking in price, getting an established schedule until you actually get a notice to proceed to the vendor. They're not going to say, hey, we'll hold this spot. Once they get that, then they can and build around that.
Can you speak to the, this is diesel, can you speak to the type of diesel?
That's great. Yeah, so renewable. So LTD chose in 2020 to use a renewable diesel. So that has 99% reduction out of greenhouse gases. But 99% renewable fuel source and a 1% that has some sort of bio or different type of fuel. So when we say renewable, it's not something that people provide on the market at your local gas station, but it is something that we're purchasing through a cooperative agreement that we have with EWEB and other local partners. So it is 99% renewable, 1% fossil.
So if they last for 12 years, they'll be diesel the whole time, or is there any way to convert them?
Yeah, they're actually, some people look at repowering those is what they call it. FDA allows for that. So you can choose to say, hey, we want to take it from a diesel vehicle and repower it to electric. I think that's typically the most consistent how people do. They don't probably take it to any other things, but yeah, you could potentially repower it to electric.
Because I'm sensitive to the diesel thing,
right,
and how there's so much enthusiasm for all electric. So just, is there a strategy or a plan to communicate why this is happening? I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, but to the community, I wonder if that's.
Yeah, so tomorrow you get me as well, as we're kind of on the agenda to talk about what does that fleet procurement look like, some of the scenarios we've looked at, what the best thing is as far as what does it, how does that impact service? What are we looking at? So we can choose, and before the board, we have the questions. You guys have the ability to say, no, we don't want to move forward. We want to look at other options, but from a staff recommendation, it is diesel, more to really identify how do we get service out on the road and keep it on the road. So using renewable diesel helps with that greenhouse gas environmental emissions that we're trying to strive for while still allowing service delivery with the MX buses, and to highlight that more, that span of service that they supports, no bus, and even hydrogen, which is a zero tailpipe emissions, could do the duty cycle that we currently are asking our MX vehicles to do. So we could choose electric, and that's an option. What that does is it doesn't require one bus, it requires multiple bus to deliver that same amount of service, and cost more labor, cost more for the fleet team to support. But as far as really a recommendation to continue to keep service while keeping your costs in a manner that makes.
Yeah, I'm not questioning the recommendation. We just heard so much about it last week that just think we need to be prepared to explain that in a way that.
Absolutely.
Chair, that's why I wanted Matt to speak about that just a little bit. We heard that when we were in D.C., the senators wants to get our experience on our electric vehicles. I think it's important for us to be able to communicate that so we get the technology right.
Yeah.
Everyone's outcome is the same in terms of the environment, but for how we get there. So Matt's going to tee this up tomorrow night for the board. Comparisons, and for tonight, we're looking for a recommendation to advance this to the board and have an understanding with all the different propulsion opportunities are and what their impacts are both financially and environmentally.
Are there any other questions?
May I add just something that I think, so we do have an agency up north that has 60-foot five-door electric vehicles that they're piloting or that they're testing. And so we're in communication a lot with our partner agency to figure out how we're doing, what's your successes and what's your pain points. And just talking with them, their bus can maybe go 50, 60 miles before it needs another charge. And so as you're trying to figure out how we advance a technology that obviously there's momentum behind, but also pointing towards Tom and Joe, the service delivery, how do you do that? So as we were talking, I was like, because we were thinking about bringing it down here for the World Games. And then I'm like, I don't see that running a loop or two. So I think those are the complications. There's ways around it, but most of those find yourself the operating cost of, you know, trying to manage to.
I think that's also the explanation that's going to help people really understand. I mean, that's pretty... Any other question?
What's the average, I guess, charge time of an all electric bus?
Ooh, you guys are good. So it all depends on the battery capacity and what technology you're using. So we say about 2 to 3 hours if you're on a 150 kW charger, and that's what we currently have out there. When we look at, we also have what they call sequential charging. And what that does is it looks at one bus plugged in, it'll charge that up to a certain percentage and look backwards to see if another bus is plugged in. So it's not just, it's delivering 150 to all buses at all times. It only goes to one bus in that sequence of three. But if you have the ability to charge up with our depot-based scenario, 2 to 3 hours, all depends on what it comes back in on the state of charge. And then to elaborate more on that is you have a curve. So when it's like a bathtub, when you're filling up a bathtub full faucet, right, just let the water go. But as you get closer to that top, you're starting to, you know, ensure that it doesn't spill over, you're turning that faucet down. So the same with batteries, you're ramping that faucet down as it gets closer to that full state of charge.
Good bathtub.
Can't say it was mine.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, Matt, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Okay, and now we are at the monthly financials and Pam. Can I have a recommendation that we approve this contract recommended to the full board?
All right. Thank you for inviting me here tonight to do one of my favorite things, talk about numbers. So I appreciate having that opportunity. For all of you over there, we did intend to put this up on the screen so that you'd be able to see it, but that's not going to be available tonight. So if you do want a copy of this afterwards, just let me know and I'll make sure you get one. All right. So tonight we're looking at the report for the 7 months ended January 31st, and we are going to begin with a section of the report called Revenue and Expenditure by Fund. The first thing that we're going to look at is in the far left side column is where the annual budget is. And the first thing that might take or draw your attention is that our annual budget has showing a $10 million deficit. You might think it's a little bit unusual to see a budgeted deficit right at the top of the report. So I wanted to be sure everybody knew that we did plan that well in advance. And this is making use of our beginning working capital. And I will talk a little bit more about that in just a minute, but I did want to point that out. So with that in mind, our year-to-date budget is that expenditures would outpace the revenues by 5.9 million. Our actual results are that revenues are exceeding expenditures by 209,000. Revenues are about 4 percentage points above the budget, and expenditures are 4% less than where we expected to be. A portion of the expenditure result is because we did budget for about $1 million in contingency this year, and we have not had to dip into that contingency yet. The higher revenues are because our payroll taxes are outpacing where we thought they were going to be. In the Medicaid fund, the next one down, the budget goal for this fund is to be break even. Actual results show a small deficit of $113,000, but both revenue and expenditures are below budget. This is due to us budgeting a higher ridership, and we are trending higher this year, about 5% more than last year, but we are still at about 68% of the pre-pandemic amounts, COVID amounts. So we keep trying to budget a little bit higher, and then this is the second year in a row where we still come in substantially below that mark. So we may be taking a different look at that for this next year. Under the next page, if you're following the paper, Specialized Services Fund. The budget goal for this fund is also break even. The actual results show a surplus of $541,000. This is largely due to the timing of our funding transfers from the general fund. Of the 13.6 million budgeted revenue, 4.7 million of that is from the general fund. As with the Medicaid fund, both revenues and expenditures are substantially below budget. Ridership is trending up, or up about 6% over last year, but at about 62% of the pre-COVID levels. The next fund is our point-to-point, or P2P fund. The budget goal for this was a surplus of $109,000. Now, again, in this one, we would normally expect a break-even budget, but due to grant timing, we anticipated that this fund would have an actual deficit balance in their fund for the prior year, and we wanted to make sure that deficit would be made up. The fund is currently showing a surplus of $89,000, again, mostly due to timing of transfers from the general fund. Both revenues and expenditures are trending below budget. And in this case, it's due to project timing. However, we are expecting to exceed budget by the end of the year due to a recent agreement with the City of Eugene pertaining to the bike share program. This change will necessitate a supplemental budget, and that will be presented to the board during the regular budgeting process. That was something that came along after we had finished the budget, that agreement with the City of Eugene. On the next page, Capital Projects Fund. This fund is budgeted to be break even, and as of the date of this report, revenues are exceeding expenditures by 4.3 million. This is due to the timing of grant reimbursements and general fund match transfers. This fund can have the most variation in regards to budget versus actual. This budget includes all of our projects that are planned for the year, and it is normal, actually, especially the last couple of years, it's been normal to be below budget due to delays in the timing of the projects. In the current budget, the most significant projects expected to end this year below budget are our replacement vehicles, the Franklin Rays project, alternative fuels infrastructure project, and we have various technology projects that are ongoing. Any unused budget for the delayed projects are rolled forward into the next year's budget. So we do not just keep that money and it goes someplace else. We do keep track of it and then roll it into the next year's budget to be available. Okay, that's the end of the revenue and expenditure report. Does anyone have any questions on that? Sure.
A comment. I love the way you report it presented. Is there anything in there that keeps you up at night?
Not yet. Maybe in the budget. Yeah, in about a month and a half, I'll be talking to you about maybe a couple of things that cause me a little bit of worry. But no, actually, I feel like I'm very fortunate because I inherited a very financially stable organization from Christina, and we'll just be continuing that on. But in this current year, no, I don't have any worries.
Yeah. I haven't seen yours either.
So. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about resources now. On the next page, our report shows the fiscal year resources for each fund. And the total resources includes beginning working capital, as well as current revenues, which we have summarized on here by their major type of revenue. So on the previous pages, we were just talking about current revenue. This page brings in the beginning working capital, so you could see a big picture of the true resources that we have available. At the top of the section, you'll see a line that says beginning working capital. And I want you to think of each of these funds as kind of sort of like a checking account. So the beginning working capital is like the beginning balance of your checking account at the beginning of the year, which our year begins on July 1st. So total resources available expenditures is the sum of our beginning working capital plus our current year revenues. So So I did mention that I was going to talk a little bit more about the $10 million that we budgeted, more in expenditures than revenues, and that the difference was going to be made up from beginning working capital. This amount is estimated several months before the year end and before, of course, the books that are closed. Our budgeted beginning working capital is about $20 million. Our actual is 36.5 million. This difference is due to a combination of things. One being payroll taxes being stronger over the pandemic years than we expected it to be, like quite a bit stronger. And then we also had lower expenditures. We continue to budget at levels that we expected things to come back faster than they did, and our expenditures were less than that. So we did end up in a nice situation for our beginning balances. And then when I get to the expenditures, I'll talk a little bit one more time about that $10 million and you'll see what happened to that. Moving down the page, we'll see that the operating revenue is better by budget by about $280,000. This is due to an upward trend in fares. And then continuing on down, you'll see that non-operating revenue is about $2.66 million better than budget. This is due to a higher than expected increase in payroll taxes. So that's what we mentioned before. So under the specialized services fund, total resources are $3.6 million below budget. And then at the top of the next page is Medicaid fund, and those total resources are $2 million under budget. As mentioned earlier, the ridership is slowly trending up, but it's still, the reason it's below budget is because we had budgeted at closer to COVID, the pre-COVID levels. For the next fund, the point-to-point fund, this is where I'd like to draw your attention to the deficit amount in the beginning working capital. That's where that $109,000 comes back in. But I'm happy to report that this deficit was actually resolved before the beginning of this fiscal year with an actual positive beginning working capital of $141,000. So the actual total resources are better than budget year to date by 86,000. So that's been all taken care of. In our capital fund, that last one, our actual beginning working capital exceeded budget by 7.2 million. And that change in the beginning balance reflects the delayed projects for previous years. And it serves as a holding place for our general fund match for those projects. So as I mentioned, we just keep carrying it forward so it's available when those projects are needed. Total capital resources are currently below budget by $10 million, which is the total of the two together. But that is reflecting that our grant income so far is below budget. And that's really, again, just timing. You have to wait until that if your expenditures are lower, then the your reimbursements are going to be lower as well. So, any questions about the resources or the capital funds? Yeah.
We're a comment on the working capital, especially with in the general fund. Yeah, always it's comforting to sit here and say, well, it came in higher, we have to look at future trends. I think in general, what I want to say is that I think it's our responsibility that if we collect taxes, we need to spend them in a responsible way rather than collect them and say, well, that's great, we collected more than we thought we would. We need to respond to put those dollars to work. You know better about what's in the future.
No, I really appreciate that because a lot of times, people look at our financial statements like it's business, but it's really not. When it's a public entity, the whole point is that you track your resources and your expenditures, but you want to be using those resources. So, yes, we do have that definitely in mind in the current year budget, and I think you'll see in the long-range financial plan we do have a plan to be able to use those resources responsibly.
So I appreciate you pointing that out. Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, on to expenditures then. So the next page is expenditures. In the general fund, our total general fund expenditures are $3.2 million below budget. However, I anticipate this to change because as it's noted in the small print there, our personnel expenditures are actually trending a little bit above where they were expected to be at this point in time. So 7 months into the year, we would expect that to be about 58%. Our personnel services are at 60% of the budget. And I do anticipate that continuing to go up, for a couple of reasons. One is our internal organizational changes, but also the completion of the HEU contract. And then we've now applied those changes from the contract to our current payroll. In covering any of that expenditure shortfall, should we have one, we have the option of using our operating contingency. We have $1 million saved there, or a supplemental budget which would increase our personnel budget. Any supplemental budget would have to have some offsetting revenue, and if we did do that, we would be looking at our increased fare and our increase in payroll taxes to be able to do that. So I'm not worried about having a shortfall by the end of the year. We will have enough resources to do that, but we may have to increase the amount of expenditures that we thought we were going to have, which is where the supplemental budget comes in. That we would be required to do that. So you may see that in May as well. We're still looking at those forecasted numbers to see if the contingency will be enough or if we'll need an actual supplemental budget. In the general fund non-operating area, you will see the transfers to the other funds listed. General funds are a key resource to our other funds, and it makes it possible to maintain those other programs. The capital projects transfer represents our match obligation plus any projects that do not have outside grant support. I also wanted to point out that the transfer to the sustainable services reserve. This is where we're going to talk a little bit about that $10 million again. This amount approximates 2 months of expenses. And it was a goal of the board and a goal of Christina to establish a sustainable services reserve, but I just call it the rainy day fund. Mm-hmm. And it really is a great accomplishment for LTD to have a rainy day fund to be able to ensure that service levels can be maintained should we face another economic downturn. So, and that combined with knowing that we had some carryover surplus is why we budgeted specifically to use some of those resources this year. The remaining funds all have expenditures below budget. As mentioned earlier, specialized services, Medicaid are below budget due to lower ridership. And PGP and capital funds are due to related projects. That was relatively straightforward. Any questions on any of the expenditures? Okay. All right. One more page. Reserves. So I feel it's important for you to see where our cash reserves are and where we have set aside for those. So in addition to the sustainable services reserve, we also set aside 2 months of our budgeted expenditures as a cash flow operating reserve. Think of this as our minimum planned ending checking account balance. We need to keep 2 months of expenditures in reserve to be sure that we have operating funds during the year. The next line that says working capital shows the actual and reserved cash balance. So that will be back to your question that you had, Gino. So that's the true amount that is right now unrestricted and reserved.
that we have in the and the last line is the amount that we have reserved for in process and future capital projects. That's the 17 million that you see on there. Down in the last box on the page, that's the actual balances in our cash accounts. We keep cash in the Bank of America, and we have actually four accounts at the LGIP, Local Government Investment Pool. The two that are on here are SDIF funds, because those are completely 100% restricted for only SDIF projects. This is money that I'm showing on here that's available for our operating purposes. And I know Jameson already asked me about our money in our bank, you know, and are we safe or not? So how Oregon handles that, and well, the short answer is yes. How Oregon handles that is that it most public agencies obviously have more than the FDIC $250,000 in the bank. So they require banks that deal with public funds to carry collateral insurance for that. That's one thing that our auditors check at the end of the year, every year. So you would know about it if we had money that was not collateralized. And Bank of America is one of the banks that works with the state of Oregon, and they are their public funds are fully collateralized. So we don't have to worry about that at all.
What's the investment mechanism for Bank of America? Just sitting in them?
So, for that 3.7 million, you mean?
It's just cash in a bank.
It is. So our rule is that we keep $2 million in our checking account at all times. We run checks weekly. Our AP is weekly. Our payroll is every other week. And we keep the majority of our money in the LGIP. It just happened to be at the end of January. This was a little bit high than I normally have it in there because we had a drawdown right at the end of January. And those come into our checking accounts, the grant drawdowns. So, but yeah, it does earn a little bit of interest, not very much, basically just enough to offset our fees, some of our banking fees. Is how that works. So, but $2 million is what we usually try to keep in there.
How often do we snam in and look at different banks?
Well, funny you should say that. Wendy and I have been working on that because our contract with Bank of America, we've been with them for several years, and it's time to look for a different bank. And so we have done that, and there is a. Your choices are, go out for RFP, full RFP, or look at what cooperative agreements. And the City of Eugene, right? Yeah, has a very nice cooperative agreement with Umpqua Bank. So we have started talking with Umpqua Bank, looking to see what that might look like to have a partnership with them. Right now, as you know, we're right in the middle of a financial software upgrade. So, we're debating about what's going to be the best timing if we decide to make that change and it makes financial sense to do that. But yeah, we are looking at that. So, right. Any other questions on our report? So, all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Delegated authority to Wendy.
Okay, yes. So I think that so my understanding was we wanted to bring that to you guys just for you guys to see and to understand what that is. And so it's a report that we put out every month to the board, and it just provides that transparency in our contracts for contracts that are usually under $250,000 that Jameson or somebody like a chief has signed or our senior procurement officer. And so it's just giving you guys the transparency of what's been coming through contracting, but doesn't necessarily touch the board. And so you guys do have three on there today, which looks like a lot of money. But it's actually one contract that we just had three different services on for this month. And so I'm happy to answer any questions if you guys have any. Short and sweet, but I can definitely provide more information if needed.
Any questions?
No.
Yeah. All right. So you guys will see that and approve that tomorrow with the board meeting on the consent calendar. Thank you.
I feel bad that we don't have any questions.
Oh, sorry. Say it again.
No, I was just.
Oh, is it bad? No, it's not bad.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just for clarification, really quickly, that report used to be on the consent calendar, and it has been moved to written reports for information purposes at the regular board meeting, and it will continue to come to every regular board meeting. Sorry.
Thank you.
Which it makes sense because they're already approved.
Right.
Yes.
Still ask questions.
Yes. In the procurement policy, it has already been approved for, so it would be double duty. However, for transparency, we do still want to always show you what we're doing.
Great. And so Camille, you're gonna tell us about the community purpose?
Yes, so we did have this conversation a little bit at the last finance committee meeting. However, we have new committee members now, so we wanted to bring the conversation back again. Just kind of explaining the plan for this committee. I also wanted to say thank you for your comments about your excitement and appreciation of expanding the role of this committee from just contracts to additional financial information for the district. And we will periodically still come back and ask for any feedback on the information that we're bringing to the committee or information that we would like to be brought to the committee, and that we always have that open door for input and requests and feedback and such. So the next finance committee meeting will be held in July. The next would have been May. However, we're holding the budget committee that month, so we're not holding both financial committees in the same month. So from July forward, we are putting together an agenda plan for information and conversations to bring to the committee, such as the impacts of COVID relief funds starting to go away and what that looks like for the coming years. We really want to ensure that the board and this committee has a clear understanding of our financials and how it all works. We'll also be bringing conversations like looking at non-traditional grant and funding opportunities and what that looks like. The ongoing impacts of the labor contract, which has been asked about, and that conversation is coming. We are also going to be taking an annual look and having an annual discussion on kind of the strengths and weaknesses and areas for opportunities for improvement on how we manage our finances, report out on our finances, and looking at how we align our financials with the strategic business plan and kind of the structure of the organization. And we will be asking for feedback on all of those matters over the course of this next year. So with that, is there any feedback at this point? As new members on this committee, Gino and Lawrence, do you have any feedback or questions so far? And if not, that's completely okay. Yes.
I think it's great. I would add one item. We have two retirement plans that can have a significant financial impact on the organization. I don't want to duplicate the work of the board of trustees.
Pension Trust
yes. Committee. But maybe once a year, I'd check in by this group about the status of those two retirement plans.
Absolutely. That makes great sense.
I like this is a lot more expansive than the previous information flow, but it doesn't seem to have it. So thank you for that. Jameson, you have anything to add?
Oh, sure. I think, you know, the conversation is having around discovering what our community needs to be in the future ties into this nice state work that our planning terms of what do services look like, what types of services are for work in our area, what are the metrics to describe those, what are the price points, and making sure that we have the financials to support those and understanding just that kind of realm. All of that feeds into this committee here and into the larger board. So our main goal is to make sure that our board, our communities are well educated on what we're, the direction that we're going, able to get good feedback and our tool to make good decisions so that everyone's comfortable making decisions. So we're happy to take this approach. I think it's a good approach for the organization, for our communities, for the board, to make sure we're making decisions with eyes wide open. That's our full intent.
As an additional example is the zero fare conversation, which Matt got into a little bit today, and we had discussed bringing it to this committee and decided at this time it would be more valuable to bring it to the full board. So that conversation is coming to the full board tomorrow.
I was interested in the line item we talked about, the subject of potential different revenue, diversified revenue resources. Interesting conversation.
We have a lot of exciting information coming throughout the rest of this year. Thank you all.
Thank you,
Camille. Okay, so our next meeting is July 7th. Are there any other items for future meetings that we want to add besides the retirement? No? Okay. Well, I think we're adjourned. Thank you. You get your sunny afternoon back. Thank you. For 11. It's the 11th.